Hey, this is a dark tangent, organizer of DEF CON. You're about to listen to some speeches from DEF CON 3, held July 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Tropicana Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1995. Now, the Tropicana has since been renovated. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, all rights reserved, the dark tangent, and DEF CON Communications. Permission is expressly granted, though, for educational, non-profit use. If you have any more questions about DEF CON, or want to send me some email about the copyright status, please email me at dt@defcon.org, or the website is www.defcon.org. Now, kick back, get ready for some good speeches, and thanks for supporting it.
This briefing is based on a file that a mutual acquaintance of DT and I sent us. For some obvious reasons, he didn't want to present it himself, so he asked me to brief it, knowing this is a subject near and dear to my heart. Counterfeiting paper currency has gotten substantially harder as the government goes with anti-counterfeiting measures such as the microprinting and the strips. However, credit cards are still wide open, and the key to doing credit cards is the AMC Model 700. It's a magnetic card writer and reader. It will record standard two-track, track one and track two are what are commonly used on ATM and credit cards. Track three, which is occasionally used for other data. It'll also record the high coercivity cards that you see like on the back of a California driver's license or student ID that have a mag strip embedded. If you were to go get one from AMC themselves, a two-track model is about $950. The three-track model, which is not particularly useful, is another $100. The high coercivity model is about $1,700. If you get them on the street, they are much, much higher. You're paying the 50, 60% markup for someone to have taken the risk to have gotten one. I have not seen a high coercivity one on the street. The low coercivity ones are actually fairly easy to get. You can also get a used one. They're good for about 1 million swipes. The Model 700 is a little bit bigger than a brick. It has a DC input with a wall mount DC transformer. Also has an RS-232 serial input. It comes with software actually written in compiled Microsoft BASIC, and you'll get both the source and the executable typically if you get one. It lets you program tracks 1, 2, and 3, and it lets you pick the format. If you're going to get a used one, look for the obvious stuff. Look for dings or if it's really dirty. Remember, though, even one that looks like it's brand new could have been used. And to some extent, that really doesn't matter. If it's good for 1 million swipes, it's doubtful if the guy who had it before you used it 1 million times. But it is something to look for. Make sure it's not really trashed. How do you get one? American Magnetics will sell them to corporations or companies they think need to have one. If you have done some social engineering or set up a false company or something that makes it look like you're a legitimate user, you can get one. Resellers. Recycler in LA actually has these advertised now and then. Computer Shopper, if you look in the back in the point of sale equipment, you'll see Model 700s for sale. Private parties, you do see these on the street. If you are going to buy one, be very careful. If you're going to meet someone on the street corner with a large quantity of money, it is a good way to get ripped off. You want to be careful. Pre-purchase testing. You'd like to see if it works. Readers are cheap. You can get them at electronic surplus stores. If you look in the DigiKey catalog, recently they had a Panasonic MagCard reader for about $40 or $50. It would read track one and read track two. AMC did build some units that are non-standard in that they do not record the standard track one and standard track two encoding. These will cost you money and they are worthless. If you have decided to do some credit card manufacture, figure out what you're going to do and see if it's worth it. I mean, it's not worth getting a felony to go steal $10 worth of gasoline. I mean, you need to really think about what you're going to do with it. California credit card manipulation is what they call a wobbler. It can be prosecuted as a misdemeanor or a felony in some cases. What they're going to get you for technically is possession of an access device. What they call an access device is a bank account number with a PIN number or credit card information with the name and the other things that you would use. If you get over a certain number of access devices, it gets out of the California jurisdiction into federal jurisdiction. It is a federal felony. Assistant U.S. attorneys do get excited when they find people with lots of credit card numbers. Obvious things. Use your brain. Don't go to the same gas station every day or every other day if you're going to use a fake credit card. If you look up some gas stations, particularly in areas where credit card fraud is common, actually have cameras where they can get your license plate. The last point, what you're doing basically is you're using hacking skills or electronic skills to commit a crime. This is something that if it goes up before a jury or a grand jury, people are afraid of this. They don't always understand it. They think, oh, I can be a victim of this. And if you've ever spent time on or before a federal grand jury or a regular jury, something that people are afraid of and they don't understand, they tend to be very efficient at convicting people. You know, mitigate your risks. If you're going to steal something, not saying that it's right to steal, if you're going to steal something and possibly get caught for a felony, should you be stealing a $10 item or a $5,000 item? I think the choice there is fairly simple. Prosecuting minors for credit card fraud will vary in different states. They can choose to prosecute you as an adult. If it's your first offense and you're young enough, they may choose just to treat it as a less serious crime. If you're going to do it, do the thing, then sit back and think about it. I mean, was it worth it? Do you really want to pursue this? If it is worth it, how did it go? Did you do something stupid? Was it, you know, did you go to a store that was really busy? Were you at a store where you felt like you were under a lot of scrutiny? Think about what you did. Use your head. Don't be greedy. Los Angeles and Southern California have kind of an interesting phenomenon that they have a lot of Nigerian credit card rings where groups of people come over from Nigeria, propagate a fairly massive credit card fraud operation, and they do things like take the proceeds, buy Mercedes, Land Rovers, ship them back to Nigeria, and then split the country. One of those cases, it was a fairly significant case that got indicted in California and Los Angeles by a federal grand jury and then prosecuted. The reason the guy got caught is he was living in public subsidized housing. He was making tens of thousands of dollars and would not pay his $200 or $300 a month in rent. The housing police left a notice that he owed the money. He didn't do anything about it. They came in, noticed, gee, he has an embosser and credit card manufacturing equipment and lists of credit card numbers. So they called the federal authorities who came and indicted everybody. What was interesting about this case was that they actually had someone in the LA Times who was doing classified ads. This is kind of a real desirable job because people are placing classified ads by phone to the paper and giving them your name, your phone number, your address, and your credit card information. They also had someone in a car dealership that could run TRWs. So they really had a nice setup. They blew it because they were stupid. If you're going to do this, choose a time you're going to do it. Don't carry the cards around if you're not going to be using them. If you are stopped and they find you with cards, it is an access device and you are going to be in serious trouble. Know your victim. Depending on what you are going to go after with credit cards, some purchases are minimal. If you're using pay at the pump, you don't need a tremendous amount of information or discretionary data. Movie ticket machines that you can see outside AMC theaters sometimes, the CD vending machines are kind of the same. You don't have to know a lot. If you're going to go after bigger items, how far you go depends kind of on what information you have. If you've got the receipt, you'll have perhaps the expiration date, thing like that. If you want to run a TRW, then you can find out things like credit limits and payment histories. Knowing credit limits is important. If you are going to buy something with a fraudulent credit card and your card is declined because the guy is over his credit limit, it is somewhat embarrassing. You really don't want that kind of attention. Cards have other information besides the account numbers and information date. They also have what they call discretionary data. This is things that are recorded or available to the person using the credit card. Discretionary data can really screw you up. Some banks, and you can tell who issues the card by the first four numbers, make use of discretionary data. They also have programs that will sit there, analyze your purchasing, and determine, does this look fraudulent? For example, if this card gets used in California and then 10 minutes later it gets used in Florida, they can kind of figure that something has gone wrong. Small banks in general tend to be, in small towns, tend to be less picky about running a lot of anti-fraud things. One thing that's useful is get a legitimate card from a legitimate bank and read it so you can see what the discretionary data looks like. Small banks don't tend to use a lot. Citibank, Chase Manhattan use lots of discretionary data. If you look at the Kodak homepage on the World Wide Web, you'll see that Kodak now has patented an algorithm that stores a person's facial characteristics in a picture-type format, a very small number of bytes. That is probably going to be going on credit cards very soon. You can go to the homepage and check it out. They actually compress the information and use less detail in areas of your face that basically are blank, in areas like around the nose and mouth where you have edges in more detail. They actually record a higher level of detail, and they can actually get a fairly good picture in a very small number of bytes, the number of bytes that would easily fit on the back of a credit card. Know the bank in card format. Get as many cards as you can, record them, take a look at what the formats are, because they are different for every kind of card. Discover cards actually have the simplest formats, which kind of translates to Discover cards are going to be the easiest to fake. Know your target. The San Fernando Valley has got such a high incidence of credit card fraud at some gas stations that they actually have police cars parked very close to the gas station waiting for people to do credit card fraud. If you are in an area where credit card fraud is very common, then it is probably dangerous for you to do it. You always, if you're going to do this, would like to do it when the merchants are at their busiest, which typically is Christmas. If you live in Southern California or in the San Francisco area, Fry's anniversary sales are another time when you have a madhouse of people and you have people in line queued up really deep and they're going to be running you through as fast as possible. What you're trying to do is make sure they don't look at the recorded number that the card has on its stripe and compare it with the embossed number. Again, know your target. Do you have a friend who's a cashier? If so, you're basically in the money. What's going to happen is he's going to run your credit card through and he's never going to match the numbers or decline the card. If you don't have a friend, get him phony ID and put him in. If he works only for a couple weeks, you can actually pull thousands of dollars out. Know the target device. Some credit card setups use what's called a Verifone, where the salesman has to put in four digits from the credit card, and it has to match the four digits that are on the magnetic stripe. These are not common outside the country, but they are relatively common here. And obviously it is bad when you have run your credit card through, and the salesman finds out that the stripe credit card ID does not match the one that's embossed. If that is a problem, you kind of have three options. If you have an embosser, you can modify a card that you have to match the numbers of the magnetic information that you have. Or, if you've got large amounts of credit card plastics already embossed, you can find one that matches. Or, if you have gotten large amounts of credit card information, then all you've got to do is do a search, find a last four digits that matches the last four digits of a card you happen to have. If you want to get an embosser, there's basically two types. There's a manual embosser where you've got to stick the card in, position it, you use a little wheel to put the number onto the appropriate digit, and then it will emboss the card. Automatic embossers you can get that will emboss the card, and it will also write the information on track one or track two at the same time. These are obviously expensive, but people who are doing this as a business tend to want them. Finally, I wanted DT to get some good publicity, so now we can go home and say they learned how to defraud banks at DEFCON. I am loath to answer questions because my knowledge of the Model 700 is more at a theoretical level, and I said the person who wrote this, unfortunately, is not here having other problems, but DT can testify for me. But if you have simple questions, I would be more than happy to entertain them. Yes. No, I have a problem in hacking in general, in that because of the job that I have, it would be difficult for me to do a whole lot of hacking. As I said, I kind of have a more theoretical interest in it. Some of the stuff I do at work is, to some extent, hacking on avionics systems to see if I can cause problems, and then it would go wrong in terms of you get an interrupt at an inopportune time and the airplane's control system doesn't work. So I got into this scene because I came to the first DEFCON 1 and found out that a lot of the techniques people were using for hacking into systems and hacking credit cards and hacking other things are very similar to what I was doing in the aerospace business, both in terms of making sure that weapon systems are secure and also making sure that weapon systems don't fail for unusual reasons. Generally, you don't see expiration dates on things like receipts from gas stations. If you've got credit card carbons, the expiration date typically is on a credit card. That's another problem that the credit card company should deal with in terms of security, is that if you, for example, had the expiration date on the card magnetically and was not on the card embossed, you could almost use it as a PIN number. It would be simple, but the consumer could remember his expiration date, punch it in at the pay at the pump or whatever. The big problem is that security on credit cards is fairly lax because there's a trade-off between how easy it is to use the card and the amount of security you get. And the more security you have, the less easy it is to use the card. But generally, security is very poor, and you would hope that credit card companies at some point would realize that and do something. I think the picture is not going to do a lot of good because a lot of carding is done via phone call, so having your picture on the card is kind of not useful. Getting more discretionary data onto the tracks or track three is more useful because then you're requiring the person to know more about the card that he has stolen the number from. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, I think my allotted time is probably up. Oh, yes.
Anyway, just to make some